What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too. That's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they've got some mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew the gum whenever I'm, you know, driving around showing houses or making calls to my clients or before a workout. Just anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll chew a piece. It's only got about 40 milligrams of caffeine, so about half a cup of coffee, and it'll get you, kind of get me mentally where I need to be. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
Also, shout out to Gabe over at Captain Beard Co. They make great products for beard care. So they got oils, butters, balms, anything you can think of to help take care of your beard. And they use all natural ingredients, and it smells amazing. And as you can see, they've also started making candles, which make this podcast studio smell even better. And I use their body wash, and it's amazing. All their products are great, and I would highly recommend checking them out. And when you do, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases.
And also, before we get started introducing our guest, just want to say one quick word. Obviously you can tell we are a newer podcast, and we are, trying to figure things out as we go here. And so if you've watched any of our episodes, or, you've listened to anything and you've gotten something out of the show, I would love it if you could click that subscribe button for us. That would help us out a ton. We are trying to grow the show, so every little thing helps. Hit that like button on this video also. That helps us out a ton, too. So we'd really appreciate it. Now to introduce our awesome guest today. He is a husband, a father, the president of Title Resources, the great and powerful Brian McGovern.
How we doing?
What's going on,
good
man?
To have you, man?
That was like a solid open by right. Both you guys. Like just going in, NeuroGum.
Yeah.
What did you say? I got to read it. L-theanine.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, this guy's spouting off some science over here. And then I should have grew out my beard for the beard oil, man.
Yeah, you checked it out. I've seen you with a nice full beard.
I can. Wintertime's coming. It just keeps going in winter. You're like, it's all right.
A little face scarf,
you know?
Yeah, first picture.
The
first picture you had up for the networking group, I was like, man, this guy looks like Pablo Escobar.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, during COVID. I grew out a vicious mustache. You should have seen this thing. And then my hair got long, too. It was nice. Yeah. It was good. Yeah, the stash will come back, here and there. The beard goes, and then I trim up the beard.
Just
feel powerful with the mustache, you know? I don't know if women like it or not. You know, I kind of like, I feel like they adapted to it during the COVID
era. We can make that a poll.
But the mustache, I feel like I got, when I had the initial mustache, the amount of dude compliments I received.
For sure.
I was like, but every man, I guess it feels powerful with a good mustache. They see one, they want it.
I'm a fan of all facial hair, but I feel like it's like that and like working out too. I feel like you get more compliments from guys when you like lose weight and start getting more muscles and stuff. Like you feel like you're almost working out for the guys' respect more than the girls.
It's an awkward thing when someone's losing weight. I feel like to acknowledge of the opposite sex.
Sure, unless it's always, like blatantly obvious.
Yeah, it's like. You're on Ozempic, hey, what are you doing? Like, I know what you're doing. I saw you a month ago, and now you're a stick. But yeah, working out, because you can appreciate it. It's difficult,
For sure.
I think men more like, yeah, man, good job.
Absolutely.
Getting on there and
you don't feel as creepy.
Damn.
Yeah. Your legs are looking great.
Damn, those calves.
Damn.
He must work out.
Buns on that one.
Yeah. Check out the buns on that one. He must work out. Well, Brian, why don't you give the people listening just kind of like a little brief overview of who you are? Give us kind of like the origin story and the backstory of Brian for the people out there that don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, you can go
36 years back.
one time.
You can start from wherever you want, but just
So I'm from St. Louis, born and raised here, and you know, went to college to Mizzou. I was at Missouri State for a small stint. That's how I know Pat.
And go Bears.
Then, yeah. So, you know, really haven't left Missouri. I lived in Chicago for a year, you know, and have a good relationship with Pat. So I'm probably on the show for that reason. But I own a business, Title Resources, Inc., which you had mentioned. So there's the entrepreneurship of it. And then you're open, like, man, you know, fatherhood, man. I don't, you said all the things. It was, you've said it before, I'm sure, but yeah. it was very well said. But I am a father. I'm a man. So, you know, that's probably the reason I'm on the show is it, those experiences. That I can speak to, but yeah, I have two girls. They're 7 and 3. My wife, Danielle, she's from the St. Louis area as well. But yeah, that's, I mean, we can get deeper when we need to, you guys just prompt me and pry, but you know, that's my background a little bit in lending, what Pat did. So him and I, had the same perspective of that for a while. And then, but yeah, so moved into that a couple years ago. And it's been exciting that, you know, I thought it would be like, oh, this would be easy. I was a loan officer and I know how those work, you know, and it's a transition of growing a business and earning trust of new clients and new partners. And I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the perspective of that side of the transaction. And then just getting in front of people and making new relationship, new partnerships. So it's been almost 2 years that I've taken over and starting to see the fruits of the labor, you know, now. And where I was before, I was 1 of 5 and we grew to 250 employees. We grew into multiple states. So like, I kind of was like, hey, I wore a lot of different hats and I know how to do this, you know, and then you do it on your own and it's a lot different, you know, and you respect the people that ran a business, that do run a business. You know, I respect who I worked before. Because it's a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be, you know, and, I probably strategically didn't do it correctly, but mentally I did it correctly, you know, and just kept grinding. So, that's a little bit about where I'm at, you know, from a business owner perspective.
Well, tell us a little bit about Title Resources. What separates you from other title companies? I know you and I have had this conversation, but let's tell the listeners a little bit about Title and then what separates you from other companies.
Yeah, so when I got into it, when I said I thought it would be pretty easy, I was like, I know realtors and I know loan officers, but a lot of title companies, you know, and I wouldn't mind being in their position, but they have joint mentorships or they're associated with, you know, a company, you know, and they're in the same office and they're in those things. And, you know, that there's some joint, you know, kickback's not the correct word, but you know, there's a affiliated business agreement, you know, so that they're making some money, you know, and the title is making some money on the deals that come in. And then the broker of that company is making some money, the business that goes there. So, when I started, someone reached out to me and was like, hey, you're the only person involved in this. Like, and I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, you're not associated with a title or with a real estate company or a lender. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm a title company. Of course I'm not. Like it's a third party. And he's like, no, like I'm doing all this research and like out of 20 title companies, everyone has some connection to some, you know, there's either a joint ventureship or, you know, this title rep is married to this, you know, realtor, you know, so there's something there. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I hadn't thought about that. Or I didn't realize that. So as a title company, you're the non-biased party of the transaction. So you're really supposed to have that non-biased opinion. And if the title company is making some money or if the real estate company is associated, like, is there a non-bias there? Is there a good representation? I think there is, like, I'm not saying that, like, but you know, at what point, is it not? So it's me independent, you know, I have really good cost. I don't have 20 locations. I do a lot of mobile closings. I do a lot of remote closings and I transfer that savings over to the clients, is a differentiator right now. You know, being cheap isn't best, but, you know, we deliver a really great experience from a digital standpoint, security standpoint, customer service, but I can be more affordable just because of the size of what we are right now. So those are components of differentiator. You know, I'm not beholden to any. So I'm representing the buyer, the seller. You know, they're the ones paying those fees. But the people that refer it are lenders and realtors. So, you know, you got to make them happy too, right? But that's a big thing that separates. And then for me, the space felt old, you know, and I love technology, automation, AI, and the system. You know, I saw somewhere like the average age was like 60. There's not trying to bash people on title, by the way. Like I've worked with other title companies that are incredible and they have people at the same age as us. But like just from a super high level view, those are kind of the reports and doing it. So I was like, well, I'm at a smaller stage where I can implement change. You know, changing a corporation, a way of doing business is extremely difficult. The adoption rate is just possible. So it's like, hey, there's a really good opportunity for me to implement a very more advanced digital system and do that. And these other title companies can do that too. And they can offer the same things, but they have 100 employees, you know, and do you want, you know, Susie, who's 62 and is like, I'm going to retire in 3 years learning how to do the e-signatures and remote online. They're like, no, this is my system. This works. Right. It ain't broke. We're not going to fix it. So, that's a big thing I'm really focused on is the technology, you know, and offering a more digital customer friendly experience. And the system I have is a secure portal. Really, I got into it from wire fraud, how to prevent that, right? You know, so I got into the system and then it provided that high level visibility for borrower, seller, realtor, lender, the one secure portal, communication through there. Email still exists, even though I dislike emails for data transfer.
Same.
But, and then, so the client has like a Domino's pizza tracker, right? You know, saying like, hey, I'm here. This is where I am in the process. So I think what really my biggest focus in trying to separate is like calling clients, you know, like even being in lending forever, the title company did, you know, like, and it's just like, oh, they're there. And most clients don't even know the title company exists. They might see the name, but they're like, I just thought it was my lenders. I thought it was my lender,
right.
You know, that was the title company. So I like to pick up the phone and, I like to have Ryan pick up the phone and call the people and say, hey, you know, I'm going to talk to you. I may need some information from you. This is what this means. Hey, we got title commitment back. This is, you know, like, there's things on there. You don't need to worry about these things. We need to worry about these things. Trying to educate the client, you know, and let them know like, hey, you know, we're here to represent you. You're the one paying for our fees, you know,
because right. So you represent them even after the fact.
Yeah.
So.
So that's a big component, you know, is trying to almost have that direct to consumer feel. You know, I'd love to get to a marketing standpoint. You know, like, hey, you know, you can shop your title fees. You know, most people don't know that. And, you know, try to create that message. Title's like the least expensive thing in the transaction. Right. So it's kind of like, you know, but
drops in a bucket.
Yeah. You know, so, but I love work, you know, like, and I love working with realtors and lenders, and it's great because you have a relationship because you do multiple transactions together. But, you know, I do like working with clients and educating them on, and with my background in lending, I don't like try to mow their grass, the loan officer or anything, but like, you know, just, I have that knowledge of like, this is the feelings and emotion going as a buyer and seller through this process. So like, let me also be, you know, a soundboard to get you through this process. So that's a big component. You know, I always tell everyone in the office, just pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone and talk to people.
Much easier. People just pick up the phone, make the call.
Yeah. It's unbelievable people don't do that. It drives me crazy.
Oh man, it's like I can spend an hour going back and forth with you on a text message, but we can just solve this in like a 5-minute phone call. Can we just jump on the phone and talk real quick? Especially agents, man. I feel like there's a lot of agents these days that I've called because now, especially with the changes with the buyer's agent commission,
yeah,
you know, you have to, I mean, I was doing this anyway before I would even go look at houses with my buyer clients. I would always call the listing agent and chat with them before I even went and saw it most of the time. But there'd be times where that didn't happen, or I called and I didn't hear from them. But now it's like, I really need to make sure that I chat with them before we even go look at the house, because I need to let my clients know, like, hey, this one's not paying out a buyer's agent commission, you know, so this one's going to cost you an extra 2.5%. Yeah. If you guys do want to buy this, I just want you to, you know that up front before we go look at this and you fall in love with it. But like, agents are just so, there's a lot of them won't pick up their phone. Yeah. It's like, man, like, that's kind of what we get paid to do. Paid to be available and chat, you know, I'm on my phone all day, every day. And that's just kind of part of it. That's what you sign up for in this business. So answer the phone.
Yeah. And I think I worked with someone one time. It's like, I didn't like the tone of his tone in the email or something like that. And I was like, the tone of the email. Yeah. And I was like, no, dude, you're pissed off. And you read that way in your own emotion, you know, like,
for sure.
Pick up the phone and it's like, yeah, hey man, how you doing? Like, we're all on the same team. We're trying to achieve the same goal. But it's like, you read an email and it's like, you know, these keyboard warriors, and it's like, they get so angry. And I'm like, no, you're just angry. They're just data transferring the information to you. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. You know, my emails have like an excessive amount of explanation points. You know, I'm like, I'm happy. I'm happy. Everyone's happy.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's one thing when you're like, you're talking with somebody consistently through text or through email, and that's your only form of communication. You can kind of pick up on some of their nuances, but at the same time, you're still reading it in the moment that you're in, what you're feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, I try to avoid, I get so many emails a day. I always tell my clients and agents, I'm like, please do not email. If you are trying to have a conversation with me, you can either text me or you can call me. Or, hey, text me, say, hey, I have a question. So then, all right, well, hey, let's hop on a call. When are you available? Because I would so much rather do that than sit here, because, I mean, I get emails and you know, it's good to a certain extent. So, like, if I'm really, like, I get a response back that really just pisses me off, I'll type out what I really want to say. Yeah. But then I'm going to let that sit for a little bit.
Sit in the drafts.
Yeah, and I'm going to come back and after a while and come back to it. So there is that. But I mean, I don't know. It's just when you're receiving anywhere from 500 to 600 emails a day, it's just like, I don't have time.
Can't.
I don't have time. I wouldn't get shit done if I had to sit there and just monitor emails all day.
Well, and that's what in the system I have, it has tasks associated for like realtors and lenders. So you still get dinged and notified in email, but like one realtor I was working with for a while, and she just never used the system. And then finally, after like 10 transactions, she's like, oh, I logged in. That thing's awesome. I was like, yeah, instead of getting an email at 9 a.m., you know, 12:30, 2, 3, you just log into the system and you have 5 tasks associated with what you need, you know? And it's like, and that's nice as a realtor, because you guys are living out of your car, out of your pocket, you know? And it's like, seeing the emails, you're flagging them, and then you're going to come back. So it's like having that. And there's a place for email, you know, I mean,
sure.
It's a giant, it's, you know,
amazing like, technology.
It's a great tool,
yeah. But it's like, yeah, if you can have an opportunity to not have data transfer, you know, and conversing and creating solutions, that's picking up the phone.
So
I want to ask, so when did you, what was the transition line, or I guess why and when was the transition that you transitioned from the lending side to the title?
Yeah, so I'd love to say it was like I had this big aha moment, I did have kind of an aha moment. I was in Florida with my family, and I had worked nonstop. I traveled all over, and I was doing all these things, and I always had that itch of seeing the growth of the company to like kind of do it myself, right? And when I had that thought, it was a little bit during COVID. I got to be at home more and see my oldest at the time. Like, man, there's more to life than like working time. Because that's what I did. You know, it was like 8 to 6 in an office. And if I wasn't in an office, I was traveling. And then COVID kind of brought me home. I was like, oh man, I'm like missing my daughter growing up. It's like, leave work at 6 and it takes, yeah, I was relatively close, 15 minutes, you know, 30 minutes. Get home and you got a little kid, you put him to bed around 7,
you
know, like
an hour with him.
Yeah, I was like, okay, see ya. So I was like, well, I got to do something different. So I wrote a date on my board, like, hey, if things aren't the way I want them to be on this date, you know, I'm going to do something different. And then, rates in the 2020, 21, you know, paycheck was good.
Yeah,
paycheck was all good. Right. You know, so I was like, whatever, I can deal with it. But then the market started to shift, and I kind of had a strategic plan of like, hey, I think this is what we should do. And it just wasn't going in the right direction. And so I was like, you know, I don't think I want to, you know, start over here, you know, where I'm at. And I loved where I was at, who I worked with, but it kind of aligned, you know, because if that never happened, the date on the board maybe have just kept moving. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting a paycheck, you know, like, and going off on your own is difficult and scary. But it just kind of aligned well. So I just kind of, you know, had a plan of like finishing out the year. You know, it was easy. I was like, let's just finish out the year, and there's no W-2 or anything for the
year. So that was in 2021?
2022. So I finished 2022 out. That's when like 22 was the year of the transition, where it was like rates going 3 to 4 to 5 and like in a couple months, you know. And so that was the lack of strategy on my part. Is I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur and do it on my own, and I was like, I'll be great at it. And but I didn't really think about what I was wanting to do. So I had the opportunity to take ownership of Title Resources Inc., which was like going out of business theoretically. It's not like I took over a business. So it was every bit of a startup. And
so how did that happen?
So it was actually a title company we had worked with where I was lending, and there, you know, I think we did a lot of refis, and I think we were a big portion of their business, and rate environment was changing. I think the owner was like, going to retire or do whatever she wanted to do. So that's, you know, it was like, well, hey, you know, instead of closing it down, you know, I'll
take it
up. Yeah. Swing at that. So, and I had a partner at the time. He was doing it with me. He tapped out, you know, after a little bit, cause it was tough.
So now how did that work when you took it over? Did you have to buy the business from them, or how to
yeah, there's a transition of, you know, them transitioning it over and being paid as a consultant, things like that. Okay. But yeah, it wasn't overly expensive, and they weren't handing me a nice, you know,
yeah,
a great thriving
thing. You essentially had to they had kind of a framework, and you took it.
Yeah. So, but, and then, that's how it played out. I just wasn't very strategic of like, I want to be in title, you know, like this is what I'm passionate about. And I know it, like, there was a learning curve for me to like learn that. I just knew I wanted to do my own thing. And that was the opportunity presented itself, and it stayed in the same I was doing. Same industry.
Sure. People you already know.
Yeah.
You know, already got to establish, and you know how the business works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like what you're trying to do. We talked about it the other day where, like, listing agents, you're trying to have them put in the contract that you prefer everybody close with title company, which I work in multiple different states, St. Louis, or like, well, yeah, just particular to St. Louis, because I've done deals in other areas of St. Louis, but like St. Louis is one of the few areas that uses two different title companies. Most places that I've worked with and closed with all close with one title company, which I think is great, because it just makes things so much easier.
I got my hands dirty and was balancing for a minute and doing some things. And, most states, will just have one title company represent buyer and seller. And for whatever reason here, it can be split deals. And, so your selling agent has a title company, and your listing agent writes in a title company. But even on the sales contract line item 5, where they write it in, it says like, it's highly encouraged to use the same title company, because you have an insuring title company. And then the listing side in Missouri, that is, it does not insure. So the title insurance is the buyer is paying for that. That's the insuring title company. Well, if it's two different title companies, you're getting form signs saying like, I'm not the insuring title company, we represented you in all of these components, and you know, you have the selling title company getting the payoff, you know, for the, and then they're sending it to the buying title company to initiate that payoff, and then you're wiring funds to the other title company and different banks. And I think everyone that's in the space agrees, you know, it's not efficient. And so, yeah, I started having agents I work with on actually Susie, did it on one of her deals, and I liked her language on it. And, but it was just seller prefers to work with Title Resources Inc. for a more conjoined closing, smoother trend, you know, like we're not trying to like piss on another title. Like at first, right. I think it was going to like for a better, awesome closing because the other title, you know, it's just like, no, it's just like no other title companies agree. I think like, of course I want, you know, if I only have a seller, yeah, money, right? You know, if I only have a buyer, it's money. But like, I think everyone's always pretty happy to have both sides, you sure. know? And it saves the buyer and seller more money too, because you're not paying a transfer fee to the other title company. So there's some cost savings associated with it, and it's just easy for everyone. It
just makes like the Illinois side, I do quite a bit of business over there. And, you know, it just makes it so much more simple. You know, yeah. It's just one less step, like having to, all right, we're waiting for the sellers or the buyers to sign their paperwork, and then the seller has to sign theirs, and then they got to send the paperwork over to us, and then we've got to send it up to Guild, and then this and that.
Yeah,
and
we're overnighting the deed for them to, you know, right. The seller signs it, but we send it to the buying title company, and they record it, you know, and mm-hmm. it's selfishly, I'm doing that just because I saw, you know, the headache of, you know, doing it, but also, you know, I want the funds on both sides. Like, but I think it's one of those win-wins for everyone. It's like, well, everyone saves some money, buyer seller wise, and
more efficient.
Lenders are happy. Realtors are happy. You know, like everyone knows, like this is who we're working with, you know, and sometimes when you have the other people that the finger pointing starts, right? Well, that was this person did this, you know? And I was like, I always would see that in real estate transactions. I said it earlier, and just we're all on the same team. We all have the same goal. You know, like let's accomplish that goal.
I think that gets lost on some people too. It's like, sure, you're negotiating for what's best for your client, but at the end of the day, we all have the same goal, which is to sell and close on that one particular house.
Yeah.
And I don't understand when it's the fighting and like just being rude. Like I had this conversation with an agent this morning, and just she's like, yeah, I just fill them with kindness. They're like, you can't be mean to someone that's super kind to you.
Yeah,
but that's the thing, is like, you're still rude. I saw another post from another agent that was talking about you know, how they send back texts like, hey, you know, it's hard sending that text to, you know, the buyer's agent, like, hey, we chose another offer. But like, she's just like, this agent had a great response, and now she's on my list of people but like keep an eye out, like, I want to work with this agent in the future. And there's other agents out there that, you know, agent that I talked to this morning, she's like, yeah, if we get multiple offers and I know one agent's great to work with and the other one's an asshole, I'm going to choose the other agent that's good to work with. Like, I don't know.
You and I always talked about that. I was like, realtors should want to know other realtors all over the place. Like, man, if you put in an offer and you can call the listing agent, hey man, remember, whatever, we did yoga last week together, or we went to that happy hour. It's like, they're going to pick up and have a more frank, honest conversation with you versus like the person they don't know at all. And then it just, ultimately, I always look at it, it's like, I want the buyer and the seller to be happy, you know? And so if like, we're not pointing fingers and we're all working as a team, you know, we get a deal done, transaction closed, and everyone's happy.
That's the thing, is like, it's that scarcity mentality instead of having an abundance mentality. Like, they're worried that, oh, I'm going to lose business or something. Well,
yeah,
I don't know.
They're
going to
take business from me.
You and I have talked about this plenty of times, because we've had other lenders on the show. We've had other agents on the show. And we did the network or the happy hour thing. So I'm like, yeah, invite all the lenders you want. I want to be able to talk to them. I might learn something from them. Shit, Dickens.
For sure.
He's here, man. Yeah. That guy is unbelievable on social media.
Dude, his social's incredible.
It's incredible. And I got, he's the reason that I picked up my social, because I was like, fuck, this guy's onto something. I need to do what he's doing. Not exactly what he's doing. And he's got some very cool
unique things to him.
Yeah, and he like brands very well. Very always got the color, the same, like even like when he does like a selfie video, his texts are always like his color. Yeah. And then like, you know, every time he gets a buyer under contract, it's like the house in the background, and it's him making this like crazy face or whatever. And it's just, I just think he does a very good job like marketing himself.
Absolutely.
And I mean, and just like, you know, I've talked about being an agent, and you know, you're a marketing company that sells real estate. You're kind of the same way. I mean, you are the same way as a lender. You got to market yourself.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. You know, I mean, depending on the mortgage company, you know, some mortgage companies are going to have a little bit better rate here. The fees might be a little bit different, but ultimately
it's all the same.
It's all going to be very, very similar. And it comes down to like, who do you want to work with? Mm-hmm. You know? And so, yeah, it's just, I don't understand people that are just like outright nasty to people for no reason. Like, for example, the house we just got, you just mentioned it. You know, we just got one under contract this morning, and I've done a couple deals with this agent in the past. I'm like, oh, looking forward to it. She's really easy to deal with. Yeah. And we know some of the same people. It's going to be super smooth just because, and even if there are bumps in the road, I know that we're going to be able to like, it's fine working it through because I know her and I both want the same thing. You know, we both want to get the deal closed. We both want to get here. I have no intention of like fighting with her and my clients need this. And it's like, no, I'm going to tell them what it needs to be. And we're gonna ultimately get it to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing on mine. Like we were talking about that, the update calls that I do. And you know, when I get a contract, and if it's an agent that I know, I'm like, I know how this is gonna go.
Yeah,
you know. So but you know, it's great, and most of the time I have great conversations with agents when I make those update calls, but there are a handful that are just like, why are you calling me? I mean, because we got a deal. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and sell you. I'm just wanting to just give you a heads up. Like, hey, this is where we're at. Things are going smooth. Please don't call me. Let the agent know and they'll let me know. I'm like, cool. Not a problem. Yeah. Check you off the list.
Yeah.
Saves me one extra call a day. You know, it is, but I don't get it.
There's just miserable people out there. And it's sad. And it was like, you know, starting my own business, that was like one of the things. I was like, I want to do something I enjoy, and I want to work with people I enjoy, you know, like, and it's just, there's a lot of negative people out there, and they're just unhappy. It's like,
let's get them people out of here.
Yeah. I was like, let's not live life that way, you know, and just be happy.
Yeah, there's plenty of good people out there to work with. Yeah. So, and that's kind of one of the beauties of the industry that we're in. We kind of can choose who we want to work with.
Yeah.
You know,
I can do that with agents, but when you send me a client, would happen if you send me a client? I'm like, I'm not going to work with this guy. He's an asshole.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And you're going to be like, I guess I got to check these people out before I send them over to Pat. Like,
But it's easy. You know, if you're nice, it makes it easier. Right, exactly. You know, it's like when you're at the grocery store and I'm like, the cashier that smiles at you, makes your day better. Yeah. You know, it's like really simple and easy stuff. And you're just like, and you can remind yourself of it too, because it's easy to also be in a not good mood. You know, like it's easy to be that person too, but it's like, when you work with my clients, if you're just nice, eventually they become nice, you know, they're like, okay, you know, like I can't be myself anymore. I have to be nice and courteous because this person's being nice to me.
Right. Most people are going to mirror what the attitude you give them.
Yeah. I agree.
You also do a lot of running. Or do you still do running?
I'm trying, man. Yeah. So I did a whole big mile this morning.
Okay.
so I'm running a half marathon on the 6th,
okay,
the Missouri Cowbell. So,
cool. You ready for that?
No.
October 6th?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A couple weeks. My wife's like, are you going to start running for this? You know, and I was like, yeah. So I did like a walk run 6 miles last weekend, but I really have not been training. My brother-in-law is doing it. He's like, you're such a stealth trainer. Cause I was like, hey, are you doing the cowbell? And he's like, yeah, I am. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And he's like, I'm not a stealth trainer. Non-trainer.
Yeah. Just haven't been.
Yeah. But, running's really just incredible. I started running in April of 23. So my first year running a business, and, I'd never run a mile, maybe sometime in high school. I don't know, you know, but like, not really. And I remember in April, I was like, okay, I'm going to run my first mile and get there. And then I did, you know, we signed up for a 5K. My cousin signed me up, and, you know, I'd never run 3 miles leading up to the race. And I did, you know, the race came and did that. And then And I was like, well, what's the next step? This is 10K, you know, and then that's 6.2 miles. And, you know, I'd never run 5 miles leading up. And my cousin's like, dude, you know, I'm a little worried about, you know, and then I got there and I did it and I ran it. And running was really good for my mindset, of just the ups and downs of running a business and the new challenges that, that you get. And it's just like, just run your own race was kind of my motto. Like when we started, he's like, hey, do you want to run together? And I was like, no, just run your own race. Like I'll take care of me. Like I'm not competing with anyone. I'm just trying to finish the race. Right. And it was kind of the same mentality of running a business and the challenges you get, and just kind of keep going and keep running. But they always laughed about running. It was like, man, never run a mile. And then they're like, okay, run a mile. And then it's run 3 miles and then double it, you know? And then it's like, what's next? Double it. And then a little bit more, you know? And then it's like, what's next? Double it again, you know? And it's, so for me, going back to that, the mindset of kind of just keep going and pushing, but also it gives you the experience of like, once you've done something, you know, you can do it, you know? So then you can repeat it. Mm-hmm. That's why I think a lot of business owners, they'll say like, oh yeah, so many business owners, they make a million and then they go bankrupt or whatever. And then they can do it again. It's because they've done it.
Been there.
You know, they do that. So the same thing with everything you guys do, from a physical standpoint, you know, it's like day one, you know, you're probably nervous, you know, and didn't think you could do it. And then once you know you can do it, just keep doing it. And it keeps you consistent. So like me, I'm a bad example of, you know, I need to be ready for this half marathon. You know, if I consistently kept running, right, I would be in a good position, you know, but I just know I'll be able to do it. You know, like I'll crank it up. I'll just crank it up the next couple weeks here, next week and a half. But that's, you know, as far as talking about being successful, the rule 100, like do something 18 minutes a day. And after a year, you'll be better than 95% of the world in that specific, you know, whatever you did for 18. Yeah. So I guess 18 minutes a day equals 100 hours.
For you.
Rule 100. But it makes sense, you know, if you do it every day because it's consistent. Sure. And then you just get better at it. And that I have all these ideas and thoughts, and Pat probably knows this. I'm like, oh, do this and do that. And then it's like, and then you don't do it, you know? So if you don't have that consistency, you can have the motivation, but if you don't have the discipline and consistency to do those things, you won't be successful. So just staying consistent in what it is you're doing works. But that's what I love about running is like it just that mindset to keep going and push, you know, further than you have before. Because man, running's hard, you know, like especially if you're not a shaped guy and, you know, just like, and it hurts. It's like, people are like, oh, you're a runner. You know, that's like the stuff I was posting on social. So like people are like, man, you're running all over the place. Like, that's the power of social media. I'm like, no, I post a picture once a month and you think I run all the time. But but it is that challenge just to keep pushing going. And then once you get there, it's a great feeling. You get that runner's high. But it's just the double and then double and then double. I never thought I would have been able to run 3 miles. Then now I could do that pretty easily, you know, and I haven't done a marathon yet. That might be crazy stuff, but yeah, you know,
you
like
can get there, man.
If I do the training, but it's like, it's incredible how, you know, barely could run a mile and then 3 within a month, I'm running 6. And then within 2 months I'm running 13, you know, and it's like, wow, a few months ago, I would have never thought about running 2 miles, you know? So like, your mind's pretty powerful, you know, because running at every point, you really don't keep running. And that's why I was like, I'm not a good trainer. I'm just good at races. Cause I was like, well, I got to finish in the race. Like if I'm actually training, I'm like I'm done with this, you know, this is no fun. It hurts, you know, like I don't want to keep going. But it's the mind is pretty incredible, you know, that it can push you to keep going.
I mean, I've always said, and I mean, like right now, the only running that I do is for CrossFit. I fucking hate. I shouldn't say that. When I was playing baseball, I loved it. I mean, I was running 6 miles every other day, and especially in the off season where you really get the running in, but nothing was better than after an outing going for a long run. But now like I have no desire. I go for walks, post my videos on it,
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind. Like, I like walking. I'll go walk for a couple miles and do that. But running, I don't know. For me, it was all about, just getting into my own head and basically the conversations I have with myself. Well, I can do that at walking, which is way, way more fun. I would much rather go at a walking pace, a quick pace. That's running. I just remember how I'm getting it again through walking, but just like the way you can work through things on a run.
Yeah.
Like it's very therapeutic.
Yeah.
And you 100%. When I started running, it was very negative talk. Like, if you can't make it to that bowl, like, you're a loser, you know? Like, and that's how I kept pushing myself. But then now it became more of like creating solutions. Sometimes if you're like pissed off too, like, it's good to like run that out and think about what it is you're pissed off about. Not like yelling at someone about it. You know, just like, okay, I understand like probably where they were coming from in that perspective. So I think it's great. I was working out before running, and then running became like, hey, you can run at any time. You know, just put your shoes on, just go. You know, like, you don't got to go to the gym or like where I was at. Like, there were set times, which was great because it got me into feeling better and doing better in life. But then my wife went back to work full time, so I was handling morning drop offs with stuff. So I was like, I can't really do the workouts. So I wasn't doing anything. So I got to do something. Is like, you're gonna get fat and depressed, you know. Like, and so that's why I got in. Seemed working.
Yeah, you can do it everywhere. All you need is need shoes.
Yeah,
shoes and go. Lace them up and go.
Well, I think we've talked about this too. Is just like with CrossFit, like and running and any exercise, you know, the physical side effects of it are great, but ultimately, you do something hard. Then it makes the rest of your day, you know, it just makes everything else that you're doing seem simple.
Yeah. It's just overcoming something, doing something you didn't want to do.
Building times, mental toughness, essentially.
Plenty of times you probably laced up those shoes and you didn't want to do it. But it's all about just making those promises to yourself and sticking to them. I think that's everything. Look at consistency when it comes to businesses or whatever it is. It all comes down to being consistent. Can you show up every day and make those promises that you made yourself?
Yeah.
So. Consistent. That's the hard part. Consistent. You know, that's where a lot of people fail, is being consistent with things and doing things over and over and over again. But
yeah, I think you guys said it in one of your earlier podcasts months ago. Also, it was a different podcast. I can't remember, but it was just like, you never fail. You just quit. You know, like, it was just like, at what point, you know, like, people are like, oh, I failed. And I was like, no, you quit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you kept going, you'd be successful, you know? And so it's like that consistency of doing that, you know, it's just, that's the tough thing. It's how long can you go, you know?
Actually, like, I think that was just with Mike last week, where we were talking about people that just would get hurt and say, oh, I had that opportunity, but I didn't. No, you fucking quit.
You quit. Yeah. It's, you never really fail unless you quit.
And if you're like, and that's the thing, is I don't have a fear of failure. I have a fear of quitting. Like, I mean, there's things that I have going on in my life that I'm like, man, I should probably not do these things, but I don't want to because I feel like I'll have, I mean, that's how it was too with the marriage. Like, the divorce, like, I'm glad we did it. It was the best thing for both of us. But at the same time, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm quitting. And I didn't want to be, I don't want to be a quitter. And so, I mean, I took a conversation with my therapist. He's like, you're not quitting, Pat. Like, you guys have tried and tried and tried and tried. And you've just got to that point now where it's like, hey, you're not quitting. You're making a educated decision to move on to something bigger and better. And so learning how to differentiate between the two. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I do. I have a fear of quitting. And.
Yeah, I mean, I heard this on a podcast recently, and it kind of made me think of you, honestly. And, you know, they were saying a lot of people think of divorces as failures, but, like, you got to think about it as, you know, what, it was just a chapter in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the end all be all. It was just, all right, think about all the times that you and Melissa had that were great. I'm sure there's a ton of memories with the boys and all the good times you guys had together. Like, still have those. Like, mm-hmm. those are still there. It's just, all right, you guys have both decided that this isn't, this is done for now, and you guys are moving on to something else. And all right, this is a chapter of our lives. We're closing that chapter. We're opening up another one.
Yeah. Well, I don't ever look at it as failing. Like I said, I wouldn't have been able to make it as successful as far as I had in baseball or with what I'm doing now if I had a fear of failure. Because, I mean, I look at failure as a learning experience. So, like, I never thought that it was a failed marriage. It was a learning experience in marriage. And I didn't, and we talked about this with Rocky. I mean, you got to put your pride and your ego aside and be able to admit where you fucked up and what you did wrong in order for you guys, for both people to have a successful divorce, because ultimately the kids come first. And that's something that just drives me absolutely insane is when people are saying like, they don't have a good relationship with their ex and because of this and this, and he's this, this, and this, or she's this, this, and this. No, what the fuck are you doing wrong for her to be like that? Or for you to be like that? Like, apologize, say you're sorry, figure it out, move on. Life's too fucking short. You know, like if you say you love your kids 100% and you're divorced, but you hate your ex-spouse, how can you say you love your kids 100%? Because they're half of them.
And that's tough on kid. Like, I remember growing up, it, you know, when you got a little bit older and when you realized your mom was a girl, like you realize, like, you're like, oh, she's like a chick. She sometimes has like girl thoughts, like, mm-hmm. and you know, like, but leading up to that, like, your mom and your dad were like, and still to this day, you still defend them. But like for kids, it's like if someone said something poorly about your mom, like, oh man, oh, that would, yeah. Like, yeah. So to have a parent, you right. know, it's like, yeah, man, that is quitting, you know, like, mm-hmm. like what you did, you know, that's probably more difficult, you know, it was like, hey, this isn't the best environment, you know, so let's go above and learn how to create a better situation. But yeah, I couldn't imagine, you know, that, you know, someone speaking poorly, you know, as a kid, you know, as an older, you'd be like, yeah, you know, like, okay, yeah, that my parents have some flaws or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like we all do, you know, and but as a kid, there's no flaws there, oh, you know, sure. like the, so it wouldn't be great for someone to point them out.
Well, and you hear it too, like, again, the conversation I had with this agent this morning used to own a daycare, and just thinking in a conversation that we had around it, and she was mentioning, and then it brought me back to conversations that I had with some of the teachers at boys' daycare. And she was like, yeah, she's like, you knew when parents were divorced, kids, like those, the way the kids acted. There's only one, she's like, there's only one example that I can think of a kid that we were shocked when we learned that the parents were divorced because of how, like, the kid was great.
Yeah.
Like you hear about all these discipline issues and things like that. And it makes me think back, like when we told Goddard, like, hey, we're getting divorced, and you know, we've already, you know, we've been separated for this long. We're concerned about how the boys are going to react to this. Can you let us know how they are? And if anything changes in their personality and the way they act like that, and then they come back and they're like, their boys are great. And like, I took pride in that, like the fact that and with Melissa that, and her too, like, we took pride in the fact that, like, hey, we're doing this right.
Yeah.
Our boys are just as happy, if not more, than when we were married. And that's ultimately the goal. Is like what, as a parent, what is your biggest concern? You're fucking up your kids, right? Yeah,
100%.
And that was like our biggest concern. So we're like, how do we not fuck them up because of this? Because of choices that we're making. You know, obviously raising them and teaching them things and all that, like you have, you know, like obviously we have our own core values and things like that that we want to instill in them, but like this is an external thing, and how can we take this decision that we're making between the two of us so it doesn't affect them?
Yeah.
And it's sad that it's not like that for everyone, as it should, especially people with children. Obviously no kids, it's a little bit different, but when you add kids in the mix, that's the number one thing. And yeah, I don't know. I personally don't understand it, because no matter how bad the situation is, you know, if you can come together, have a conversation, apologize for where you fucked up, and you both can do that and apologize and accept that and move forward in a better relationship, then your kids are going to be better off for it.
Yeah.
So, and plus now we're teaching our kids how, you know, it's the thing, how to properly treat your mother, treat your father, treat other people, you know, and if you've got one parent that's bad mouthing the other parent, what are those kids learning?
Yeah.
You know? So anyway,
so Brian, you've got two girls, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. What's, you know, have you, with you opening up your own business relatively recently over the last couple of years, has there been like a big transition, you know, with parenting and how's that transition been?
Yeah. You know, a huge transition because kind of 180'd the family, right? You know, my wife was doing a lot of the stuff at home. And then she went time and you know, took care of the financial burden, doing that. So I was learning, you know, like the toughness of, you know, being Mr. Mom.
Sure.
And pretty poorly, you know, like the girls made it to school and stuff, but like missed a lot of things, you know, like, you know, a lot of signups and stuff. But it's been fun, but yeah, different challenge. And parents go through this, everyone, you know, just, we saw our friends at like a concert a month ago or something. And it was like, all of us were just like kind of breathing, right. You know, we're like, whoa, you know, like just doing kid drop off and it's, you know, each kid has their own personality and doing things, and it's uncharted territory as a parent, you know, each milestone with the first one, you know, and then the second one, it's like their milestones are different. So it's all uncharted, but, so we're in a good place now, but you know, God bless my wife, you know, and she's very type A, you know, and these things, and I'm always just like, it's going to work out. You know, like
that's me and my wife. Exactly.
It'll be no big deal. You know, and she's like, well, worry. Give me what the plan is, you know, like what, when is it going to work out? And so just, you know, doing drop offs, picking the girls up. So I got lucky. The office we're in, I didn't like it. And then they bought the building and they sold it. And so like, I had to find a new place. So I found a place in Kirkwood where I live and my girls go to school. And the one place I found literally is right across from, I don't think I wanted to be that close. Maybe I do. I don't know. But like, I can see my daughter playing, at recess, you know? Wow. So it's like, I walk across the street, pick her up, drop her off, and she'll stay at the office on a few days when I grab her. And, like this morning we got in early. So she was in the office before I dropped her off. So that's been a blessing and been really fun. And, you know, I think she'll enjoy that, like, you know, getting to work with dad, you know,
yeah, going
and seeing
to, going
that.
To work.
So, it's all working itself out, but you know, there's definitely was challenges and, you know, tough on marriage and things like that, just cause, you know, things are uncertain, you know, financially, you know, like, hey, is this going to work out? Is it going to play out? You know, like, and for me, the answer is yes, but, you know,
you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just like, yep. It'll work out. It'll work out. Keep going, keep grinding. And, so those were challenging times, you know, and that's going back to running. That was cathartic and helpful to just get out there and run and these things and stay right. Any physical fitness journey is so important. It's just like,
do you guys run together?
So last year we started doing, I did the snowflake series and I brought the girl. So we'd push them in the stroller and just getting out there and being active. And then Danielle started doing a gym recently. So it's like, and if you're depressed or feeling down, like drink water and go work out, you know, like that's like whenever we don't feel good, we're like, did you have water today? You know, like our parents are generally, I don't know if your parents are like this, but I feel like every boomer I know, like, doesn't drink water.
Oh.
Like we all have like therapy water bottles, you know, like I need more water. Yeah. Like they're all here, but it's like, oh, like what do you drink? Well, I drank like six Natty Lights today. There's some water in there or six Diet Dr. Peppers, you know, I'm like,
coffees.
You're going to die. What is going on? But like somehow their body's conditioned to it. But, yeah, that's, you know, one thing we've definitely found is just, like I was starting to, you know, get depressed, and I've never been a pretty positive person, you know, and just like first time ever, I was like, man, I don't enjoy getting out of bed and just like not feeling good. So I did 75 hard. I didn't like completely finish it. I did 75 days with or 80 days without drinking, and I tried to work out, but not like the Andy Frisella. I can't say his name right now, I don't think. not his, like, stringent rules, but I did that, and it was, like, that really, like, was transformative. It was, like, man, you just wake up, work out, feel better, drink water, eat better. That's my advice for anyone you're feeling down. She's like, just start with water. And I know depression for people and anxiety is really difficult, but just drink some water, and that'll get you the next phase of go take a walk, you know, like, and just baby steps, you know, like me running, you know, like I'm kind of a bad example because I'm like, okay, go 75 hard or just like go run. Cause like, that's the only way I can do it is like, I have to have a commitment to something.
That's such a good way to do it though. I mean, just deciding to do something and going to do it.
Yeah.
That's in physical, in doing anything physical, going to make you feel so much better. Cause I feel like that's a big problem in this country is I feel like people are just, they want the easy fix. I'm feeling depressed. I have anxiety. I'm just going to take the pill. I'm going to take a pill. I'm going to take the shot. I'm going to do the thing. It's going to make me feel better, but it's like, do the hard thing.
Well, I asked my wife that she's yourself. In nursing, and that's a big, Ozempic's kind of a big thing. And it's like, hey, you get all these great benefits. But I was like, I wonder if you get the same like
satisfaction,
dopamine, you know, like working out and doing that's from a So it's like, and she's like, well, yeah, I would think your body feels better, right? You know, because you did lose weight. But like, is there the same endorphins, dopamine, all the things that play into like what makes you feel good when you accomplish a workout,
well,
you know,
well,
like
that too, but
I don't
then
know if they get those benefits or not.
Right. But then like when you do it like a natural way, you're changing your lifestyle. Yeah. Like you're changing the way you go about living your life in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're just taking a shot, you're still keeping all the same, maybe shitty tendencies that you had before. Really,
yeah, are they
just
eating poorly
right.
still? Like, I don't even know. And is your right. body not feeling
right.
good and nourished correctly? I don't know the answer.
No, we had Rocky Alberti on a couple episodes ago, and he owns a New Age Health and Wellness, and that's one of the things that they do there is the medical weight loss. And, you know, we talked, because I was very skeptical about it at first when, you know, like, oh, here we go, and I'm going to dig into him on this one. Mm-hmm. But then his response to it was great, I think, because you got to use it as a tool, and it's not something you want to get on forever. It's something that you know, it's going to kind of help boost you, but you got to do those healthy habits along with it. You got to be eating the right things. You got to be eating enough protein, because if you're just going to take the shot, you're not going to work out. You're still going to drink alcohol. You're still going to, you know, eat fast food. You're going to eat shitty foods. You still lose weight. Cause essentially what this stuff, from my understanding, what it's doing is it really slows down your digestion. So more food stays in your stomach for longer. So like you're not as hungry. And so therefore you're eating less. But you still need to exercise. You still need to eat right. Because otherwise, I mean, because the whole point of it is you don't want to be on it forever. Yeah. Like at least that's what I took from him is like, this is something you want to take for, you know, 3, 6 months, maybe a year, that it's going to help kind of really give you a jump start, but like do the healthy habits with it. And then that stuff is going to, it's going to help boost, get you the results that you want. But then whenever you come off it, you're ideally in a better state. You've done these healthy habits along with it. You're eating right. You're still exercising. The people that don't do any of that stuff, and then the second they get off it, they're just going to gain all the way back.
Right,
and then,
back.
And they're going to probably be in a worse place than they were.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I heard someone say that about depression of like when you actually get medication for whatever, it's like a reset of they compared it to computers. Like there's viruses and bugs and like, you just need to get to baseline. So like that medicine can help you get there and then build good habits and then get off of it. So like
control. Alt-delete.
Yeah. Same mindset there. If it creates good habits, I mean, I think it's, you know, obviously it's an incredible advancement in science and, you know, people on diabetes and stuff and like being able to do that. But that was just something I questioned because I wasn't sure. You know?
I mean,
like,
I was definitely skeptical of it too. And then we had him on and I was like, okay, well,
it makes
sense. Yeah. People that are on it and now it's like, you know, I was always kind of talking shit on it. Like, oh, they're just taking the easy way out. But I'm like, okay, well, if this is what they need and they're doing it the right way, then like,
maybe it's just that pill that gets them jump started to then build, have a good foundation to change a lifestyle.
You know, who am I to judge? You know, I mean, not everybody's built the same. Not everybody's going to do the crazy things or do the
well, how do we have that drug and we can't cure cancer? Yeah, like I was like, there's some shit out there that I'm like, we can get rid of this, right? Like, there's no way. Like, when I see these like new face masks and like these crazy like things that exist in military weapons, I'm like, we can cure cancer, right? Like, we've done it. Like, can you guys just?
I mean, the conspiracy theorist in me wants to say that there's probably something out there, but like. That the pharmaceutical drug companies, like, there's not, you know, must not be very profitable, or which it's, that doesn't.
And they
make
want
sense,
us all on drugs. Well,
yeah,
there's so
that's
much
how they
money.
Make, that's
in
how
that.
They make their money, man.
Well, it's like the peptides that Rocky was telling us about.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to. You know, I just started BPC-157 on my knee, and you know,
it's called the Wolverine.
The Wolverine gene.
Yeah,
and you know, it's something that they sell there that essentially you inject into the site where you've got an injury, and it supposedly helps it heal. And but it doesn't sound like there's a ton of money in it. And that's why the FDA's, or maybe the FDA's, like, they're cracking down on it, because it sounds, Rocky's assumption was that they're going to try to then take it over and make it something that they sell now, and make it something that's more expensive, and, you know, they're going to profit on it, you know? So I just, I don't know. I'm excited to see how this works for me. I've got a little bit of a nagging knee injury that's been bugging me for a while, and so I'm just, you know,
well,
just giving
dude,
it a shot.
What's going on? You're getting ready to like fight someone in the UFC?
Yeah, well,
I don't know if fight's the right. Yeah. I don't even know your match. World. Match someone in the UFC?
Yeah, I'm going to grapple this.
No, fucking fight him. Fight this. Fuck you, dude.
Yeah, no, he's a.
No, I didn't say that though, because you know, like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm not saying that either. If it was a fight, this dude would probably knock me out cold.
He's about as tall as I am. Probably has longer arms and legs than I do.
Yeah, but he fights at 145. He's like 6'2 or 6'3, fights at 145 in the UFC. Okay, the guy probably walks around at like 170, 175.
Yeah,
but then
down.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, he'll probably diet down to like, I'm speaking for him, but I would imagine he probably diets down to somewhere around the, you know, mid 160s, and probably cuts the rest of the weight, water cuts, and he probably only weighs 145 for about 15 minutes, and then, you know, rehydrates. That's what they all do. But yeah, I have a grappling match against him on October 19th. So here in St. Louis.
Want to go? We got a box if you want to go.
What is that?
Saturday?
I'll be out of town that week. On the maybe. 19th. Yeah. I'll leave. I'll be in Orlando for 3 nights and then come back. Okay. Watch the kids again.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, man. If you want to come, it'd be awesome. It's going to be a fun time. Right down in like,
good for you. So how does that even get set up, or how to, like, because you're not in it's a grappling match, you said.
So I just do jiu-jitsu. I did the striking stuff for a while, the kickboxing and all that stuff. I just do grappling now. That's all I really have time for, and it's all I really was ever good at, and all I really liked. How it got set up is, we have the community is pretty small. There's not a lot of, I mean, there's probably like somewhere in the ballpark of like 8 to 10 gyms here locally that, you know, train MMA, jiu-jitsu. And so everybody kind of knows everybody. And our friend Adam Sella, he's been a guest on the show. He put on this promotion called CXBJJ, where they're putting on.
It's like the Dana White of jiu-jitsu here in St. Louis.
Yeah, where they're putting on these like pros.
So the RNC or?
Yeah. The what?
The RNC. Dana was Republican.
Oh, that's right. Convention. Got it. Yeah, he's putting these grappling cards on where it's like a professional grappling, basically, where it's kind of like a fight card where they're just matches. Because typically in jiu-jitsu, it's, you do tournaments where, you know, everybody shows up on a Saturday, you're thrown in a bracket, and then you have several matches in a day, and then, you know, you win anywhere from 3 to 5 matches and you win a gold medal or whatever. Yeah. But this is just like a one-off match, like you'd watch like a UFC fight card, where it's just like, all right, I know I'm going against Sean, and that's my one match for tonight. And then it's just, there's a guy after me, he's going. So I've only got the one match that night, and it's just matched up against him.
That's
cool. Yeah, so I'm excited.
Is it a 6-minute?
Yes, 6-minute match, submission only. So, yeah, I'm excited.
That's exciting.
Yeah. There's a few UFC fighters fighting.
Yeah,
St. Louis has turned out a few UFC fighters over the years.
Oh, yeah.
So you got Sean Woodson going against Zach, and then
Evan Elders going against my best friend Nick. And so that's, Evan was on the show too. He's a fighter in the UFC as well. James Krause is on it. He was a coach and was in the UFC at one point. else? I don't know. It's, there's a lot of like big names in jiu-jitsu. Nick Matea, he's a out of the B team down in Austin. He's from here, but he trains at like one of the best jiu-jitsu gyms in the world, and he's become freakishly good. I've trained with him many times.
Yeah, well, let me check. I mean, I'd love to go. Let me check with the boss.
Yeah.
I remember being in college and like seeing my first like UFC, not in person, just on TV.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this white dude, shaved bald head, was in a headlock, and just this guy was mashing his head. And like, you just saw his skin. I was like, what? They need to stop the fight. You know, like, what's going on here? And then I was just like, they kept going, and then he got out, you know, and like the fight wasn't over. And I was like, this is insane, you know? Oh. And it was just like the respect to anything in that sphere. I'm like, man, that's incredible.
I think one of the nastiest cuts I've ever seen was just this past one at Oche.
Aldana. Yeah. She had like a cut from here to like down her nose. It started at the top of her forehead and like went all the way down to her nose.
And like when they would do slow motion of her getting punched, and you could just see the skin separate and could see her skull. It was,
She just had like a hatchet wound in her face.
Yeah. You said like just the baddest people. Like Dana White on the Tom Brady roast or whatever. He's like, these are two baddest dudes in like the world. And I was like, he's not wrong. Like if you're in that sport, it's like, you are like, you're a gladiator. You know,
you're modern day gladiators. And there he was sitting next to Max Holloway and Sugar Sean, which are just like two of the, you look at him, those are two guys that you probably look at and not.
Especially Sugar Sean.
Yeah, you'd never look at him and be like, oh, he's a very.
Rainbow color hair.
Yeah, he's not like cornrows. A big intimidating looking dude. They're both like kind of like skinnier. Yeah. Like they're not like these big jacked dudes. That's one of the things about MMA, jiu-jitsu, whatever it is, like anything in these combat sports, you cannot judge a book by the cover. Like you can't just look at somebody and just be like, oh, just because he's got muscles means he's good at this. Because it's like, dude, no, it's. You should be less worried about that dude who looks like he's on steroids and be more worried about that guy over there reading the book.
Yeah.
You know, like he's.
No, I remember being in high school, the football coach, and he might have been a wrestling coach too, but he said that. And he was like, get good at wrestling. He was like, it's a good bar fight, you know, thing to have. Yeah. You know, like if you can take someone down, like that ends a fight real quick.
Well,
you
dictate like, where the fight goes.
Yeah.
You know, if you're someone who wants to stay on the feet, you can stay on the feet. But
it's like that when you are in a fight, you're not worried about the guys in the front. It's that quiet guy in the back that concerned with.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, man. It's anyway, got this match coming up. Super excited. So yeah.
Are you doing the IBJ?
No, I'm not doing IBJJF this weekend. No. So it was a big tournament this weekend here in town. But there's a ton of people from the gym doing it.
Is Nick doing this one too?
Yeah, Nick's doing this one. Did you watch him compete this last? Did you see?
I saw the video.
Dude, yeah. And Nick, my best friend, he's been competing a lot recently, and he was on a another professional style grappling card in Kansas City this past weekend. And ended up submitting the guy, and it was cool. Just like he was on like this official, he was on TV. You know, it was cool. Yeah. It was just awesome to see, and I'm really proud of him.
I haven't followed it very closely, and I asked Pat this. So I was like, "Is that the one Anthony Bourdain was in?" You know, he had a documentary.
Yeah,
the Road
Runner. That's exactly what. Yeah, I watched that. I actually watched that recently. So good.
Yeah, he was. Well, that goes back to like talking about depression, and it's just like, man, that was sad seeing the decline there. But yes, he was really into it for half a decade or something, and really advanced.
People get obsessed with it, man.
Yeah,
like I mean, that's me. I mean, I started it 6 years ago, and I've done it 4 or 5 days a week ever since, except for when I had knee surgery 2 years ago, and I took 12 weeks off. But other than that. I got better back to
I started this summer. I took a break because hockey's going, but I loved it. It was awesome.
It's so fun,
it's,
man.
It's a blast.
It's, you know,
I
you find out a lot
of ass kicked.
Yeah.
I got my ass kicked.
Very
a
humbling.
Lot.
It's because
I'm sure we'll talk about being consistent. You got some of those guys that consistently been doing it, you know, and it's,
it shows.
They're an expert. In
like
that
you
field.
Like you mentioned, like figuring out times to go. Well, like the fundamentals or the basics that they were training was later in the day. Well, it was hard for me to get to those later in the day. I could do early morning stuff, but that was more of the more advanced classes. Was it the fundamentals that's early? And so I got, when I first started, the first couple of classes I took were all like beginners, like white belts and all that, which was fun and fine. Then I couldn't make those times. So I started coming in at 10 a.m. with all the purple, blue, brown, black belts and rolling with those guys. Holy shit.
Yeah,
got armbarred the very first time I was there, and within like 10 seconds of starting to grapple with this guy. I mean, it was, yeah.
Humbling.
It's very humbling. The guy's half my size, and I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah. It's something that you never show up on your first day and you're amazing.
No, I...
That's like, there's people have, especially men, have this delusional thought of what oh man, I'm just gonna see red, and if I ever get into a fight, I'm gonna see red, and he's a dead man. It's like, just because you've watched kung fu movies, you watched a bunch of MMA, or you've watched whatever, that doesn't mean you've retained it. It's like, second, because that's what's cool about jiu-jitsu versus any other, you know, combat martial art, is where you're going full on sparring every single day. Like, you can't go kickbox spar every single day. You're gonna be punch drunk in a couple of years probably. But like, I can go full on. I'm trying to take you down and submit you. I can do that every single day, and virtually walk away okay without, you know, I'm sure injuries happen, of course. But most of the time, I go live every single time I train for the most part, and it's fine, you know. So because you get comfortable being in that full on like fight mode where this guy's trying to hurt me, I'm trying to hurt him, and that's what it is. I mean, I'm not trying to hurt my opponent. My partners. That's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to submit him, he's trying to submit me, and you have that full live experience, so that, and you're used to that, you're used to feeling what it feels like with having a grown man on top of you trying to choke you or trying to take you down. You're used to that, so that whenever you do, if you were to get in an actual altercation, like, you're very, very comfortable in that chaos. It's cool.
Yeah, and talk about the mental side of that, but also the endurance side of that. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's the one thing people
will
tell me.
It's insane.
Before I come in and try it, I need to get in shape. It's like, okay, man, you can be a marathon runner and you can come in and you're still going to get tired doing this, because it's a whole different, it's a different thing.
Yeah,
you're doing using different muscles. You're doing something that's so foreign to you. You know, the better you get at this, the more efficient your movements get, and to actually know what your next step should be. And you know, I need to put my hand here, I need to put my foot here, I need to pass his guard here this way. Oh, well, he's throwing up that, so I need to go around to the other side, or I need to do this or that. And, you know, only way that you're going to experience and learn that stuff is by showing up and doing it.
That's an interesting component of, like, combat sports. It's, like, it's really artistic, you know? Like,
martial arts.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. I'm dumb.
No.
Hey, smart. Guys, here's a really deep philosophical thought. It's artistic. Yeah, dude. It's in the name.
But, I mean, every time I left there, like, I mean, I had to get peeled off the floor because I was just dead tired. Yeah. I was just absolutely done. But once you come back from it, like, once you're, like, recovering about an hour later, the rest of the day is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bliss.
Yeah. I loved it. I wish there was a way that I could juggle it all, or maybe just kind of, I don't know. I love playing hockey. I just can't give that up. Like, I can't not play hockey. That's like my release. And I wish there was a way that I could do it more, but I'm running myself super thin.
Yeah.
So.
Got to do what works for you, man.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, Brian, it's been great having you on. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go? Okay. Well, we're going to end it with one more question. We always end the show with this last one. We call it the tombstone game. Here lies Brian. What's it say on your tombstone?
Oh, well, I'm going to get cremated, so no tombstone there.
Okay.
So, but
what do they want to say in your vase?
Yeah. On my vase.
On your vase.
That's a good question. So really think about death very often. I saw something recently. You're loved in one generation, remembered in two generations, and forgotten in three. Oh man. You know, like, kind of sad to think about, but I started thinking about, I don't know my or grandmother or any of them. Like, I know my grandparents, so I was like, okay, so like, your time here is short, and like, how you're remembered is by who you affect closely, you know, and pretty much your generation, right? You know, that's the generation that loves you, you know, and you're remembered by the second. I think if you love good enough and do well enough, that expands. But I wouldn't be the one writing it, you know, it would be people that love loved me and cared about me, that write it. So I hope it's not soon, and I hope I don't find out what it is anytime soon. But
what would you like those people to write for you?
I'm trying to avoid the question here, guys.
We're not gonna let it. How do you want to be remembered?
Yeah, I mean, I just, a loyal husband, father, and servant of community, of people. I want to take care of the people close to me. That's how I always kind of look at everything. Like, people get into politics and different things. The only thing you really can control is, like, first yourself, right? And then that affects family. And then that grows within you. So, like, if you get worried about stuff happening in D.C., people probably never go to Missouri. You know, like, they've never been here and doing this. And worrying about all this noise, it's just, like, just take care of yourself. And then that will affect you. Take care of your family and community. But yeah, just I guess just loyal, good servant,
Perfect.
Of whatever it is that I'm serving, you know.
Yeah.
No, it works. Perfect.
Perfect, man. All right, guys. Well, that concludes our episode for today. If you guys enjoyed the show and got anything out of it, make sure you click that like button, click that subscribe button for us, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.